For those of you who might be concerned about the length of my talk today, don't worry, you'll be asleep by the third page. I was thinking about what to call my little speech here, and the title of it that I came up with is The Role of the Endowment in the Church, Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, trying to establish a context of thinking about the generosity that went on before among our previous members, and talking a little bit about the history of the endowment, sharing a few thoughts with you about where we are going, and to set you up for listening to the comments from Mike and Ellen. As we all know, our church finances have experienced a few bumps in the road over the past couple of years, and much of the concern is focused on our endowment and how to best use it. It's also clear that this is not the only challenge that we have, and whenever the subject does come up, it's been difficult for any of us to separate the concerns about the endowment and the other pressing issues that we face. My personal belief is that we will not be able to make progress on some of these other issues until we do settle on a definitive plan for the endowment. First things first. To set the stage, I'd like to talk briefly about the history of the endowment and how we got there. And I'll be confining my remarks to the unrestricted general fund. There are multiple components to the endowment. Some of them are restricted. I'm going to be speaking about the unrestricted portion, the ones that are available to us for any purpose that we deem proper and appropriate. The general fund has been built over the last 80 years by donations and gifts from generous church members and careful investment strategies and management. Also, the funds were expanded when the Universalist Church merged with us in the 1950s, and their endowment was combined with ours, and it included the proceeds from the sale of their building and parsonage. From before 1925 to the early 1950s, notable gifts to the general fund have been made by the many members and families, and many of these names you will recognize in the Nashua community today. Prior to 1925, the Hunt family gave about $26,000. David Gregg, our current Senator Gregg's great-grandfather, gave the church $10,000 in 1925. You think about 1925 and what $10,000 was. It's like $150,000 today. It's a big gift. A gentleman by the name of Harry Hobson, $10,000, and S.J. Robinson, $26,000. The Stevens family gave $25,000 over many years, plus innumerable contributions for improvements, and they were large annual contributors. In the late 1950s, the construction of White Wing was enabled by a $10,000 gift from Mabel Chandler, a $56,000 gift from Sadie Kenny, and large portions of the proceeds of the sale of the parsonage and the buildings of the Universalist Church went toward the construction of this very important RE wing, the White Wing. Also, from the Universalist Church, before their merger, they had an endowment that was generously contributed to by a gentleman by the name of George Wilbur, and $35,000, and a Fred Burke of $14,795, a gentleman who thought carefully. In 1960, Mary Ober gave the church $90,000, $70,000 of which went into the endowment. 1965, P.E. and Edith Fletcher gave $10,000, and an Edith Babbitt gave $10,000. And in 1970, Mabel Chandler, $5,000, and a George Melcher gave us a sprinkler system valued at $12,000. And I'd also like to mention the gift from Florence Lyon of $5,000 that is actually in a restricted fund that gives us our flowers every Sunday. The general fund consists of a balance of fixed income, bonds, and stocks, and is designed to generate a balance of investment income and asset growth, and all the happy words we can say about fiduciary responsibility. But it also provides the mortgage from our minister, Steve Eddington, and monthly payments are another source of income on that mortgage to the fund. Prior to 1981, the two biggest funds, the cemetery fund and the general fund, were managed separately. But the decision was taken that the funds should be merged so that we could get better management from the larger size. and that was done in 1981. And after combining the two funds, the general fund had a total value of $675,000. And last, but certainly not least, was Anna Stearns. In August of 1988, Anna Stearns, a longtime church member, passed from this earth. And in her will, she left a large bequest to the church, $750,000. Anna also donated significant funds to other community projects. She made no stipulation as to how these funds were to be used. She saw the church struggle through the Depression when many of the church members were unable to contribute to the annual canvas. Anna and the Stevens family largely financed the Unitarian Church in those days, as Mabel Chandler did the Universalist Church. Mabel was usually described as the richest woman in New Hampshire, and she had her own stock ticker in her study. Today, her home is the Chandler Library. The church set up a separate investment fund for Anna's donation, and a decision was taken at the time to use the income for outreach and other good works. But the definition also included the use of the funds for capital improvements to the church property. I think it's important for us to consider and to be grateful for those who over this long period of time have given generously to get us to where we are. And I want to express a big thank you to the contributors of this very brief history. There's a longer one that I decided not to read to you today, from Bob Sampson and Rick Spitz. Thank you very much. Over the past few years, we've been taking more money from the principal than is fiscally prudent. Why? During the mid-1990s, the stock market was very good to us, and we had a considerable percentage of the principal invested, and it was going like a rocket. Thinking we had plenty, we did not press on the membership to pledge more generously, and we expanded spending. Everything was wonderful. But now the stock market is not doing so hot, and our annual pledging is still rather low for a church of our size, but the spending need continues. In the past couple of years, the treasurer and the executive board have struggled to keep a balance between actual spending and our resources to meet the many needs and desires of our church. And to explain just a bit further, we have a rather uneven cash flow that we have to deal with every year throughout the fiscal year. Most of the money is spent in the summertime, actually. And this means that if and when money does run short in the wintertime, the only real source of money that we have available to us and available to the treasurer is, you guessed it, the endowment. We need to continue to pay our bills in the community to make sure that we maintain our quality reputation in the community. So we dip into the principal to stay current with our commitments. But unfortunately, the last couple of years, the dipping has gotten deeper and deeper. And clearly, this can't continue. Last year, we adopted a 5-year plan to wean ourselves off of funding yearly operational expenses such as salaries and utilities and the like. We restarted the Every Member Canvas as part of our annual pledge drive, and we developed a fair, simple giving guideline to help members determine what their pledge should be or could be. And we asked all who were able to pledge by the end of April so that the executive board knew what would be available in time for annual meetings so that we could take effective decisions. I think of the endowment a couple of ways. I actually believe that there's only two conditions in life. You're either growing or you're shrinking. There is no standing still or maintaining. And if you're really not sure about the condition that you're in, you're probably in a decline. I think we need to have a written policy approved and adopted by you and embraced by the church that defines the purpose of the endowment and how we will manage it with respect to our overall church mission and vision. And we all make a commitment to stick to the plan. We should define in writing the spending priorities for the income of the endowment. It could take the form of a certain percentage that would be earmarked for outreach, and another percentage earmarked for buildings or membership growth or salaries or whatever. But it needs to be defined to help the board and the treasurer in the decision making. And it also helps in the fundraising to know how much we really do have to raise every year keep it all going. If we run short any particular year, we should appeal to the congregation for supplemental funding before the next pledge drive. And we ought to define what cuts would be made if the appeal falls short. Think of it this way. If the endowment were just the buildings, we wouldn't think of taking parts out of the parish house and bring them over here to fix the auditorium. Soon we'd have no buildings at all. Think of the endowment like they were buildings, and we need to maintain them to maintain our presence here. And last but not least, I believe that an important component of a plan to ensure the growth of the endowment, we should write a way and communicate a way by which we can invite what I would call perpetual gifts to the future. The vision, the faith, and the generosity of the years the previous members have provided to us, these magnificent buildings and resources, we need to pass on to our children. Our most important church mission, preservation and propagation of a liberal religious values, of personal tolerance and acceptance, combined with responsible community action and the building of a civil society, are as important today as they ever have been. The endowment, properly managed and handled, will help us get there. Please give careful consideration to the questions that are asked here. Give our board and all of us together guidance on the way forward. Thank you.